You know, watching energy prices as we do, you always see some fluctuation, but there's been some wild volatility over the last week or so, up 3%, down 3%, up 3%. And then the numbers don't seem to make sense. We saw a report from the Energy Information Administration that said supplies were up 1.4 million. Then the API, the American Petroleum Institute, reported a big climb of 6 million barrels. So supply and demand, you know, the stuff's going to go down. Nope, it's gone up straight since then. So we need help. Dr. R. Dean Foreman is the chief economist for the American Petroleum Institute. Joins us right now from Washington, D.C. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thanks, David. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I now know why I'm not a futures trader, because none of this seems to make any sense. Where's the equilibrium in crude right now? What's the fair price?
You know, there's a normal range in which this thing tends to vary. And right now, oil is a commodity like many, with the financial markets either discounting risk on or risk off, so to speak. And oil's kind of been moving, and it's an indicator of where the global economy's been going. So when people are feeling pretty good about the global economy, and oil's trying to go up at that point, and when they're getting a little bit bearish, it's been sinking. So there's been a battle of sentiment going back and forth.
It's still, I guess if you stand back and look at the big picture, it has still moved within a relatively narrow range, despite this trade war, which is probably about a year and a half ongoing now.
That's a great point. And, you know, the thing that's really remarkable is we're not 2 months removed from an attack in Saudi Arabia that took the most capacity offline that's ever been taken off at once. And the market at day one moved about $8 per barrel at that point up, and within a day had settled back down to about $4, and within 2 weeks was actually lower than when it started. So the market has actually been quite resilient, and the only reason that's happened is because the U.S. has been able to supply so much so fast, taking market share away from Saudi Arabia and OPEC, and really helping insulate consumers here at home.
Well, and that's the remarkable thing, and that's really what drew my attention wanting to talk to you. I was reading some comments you made in your notes last month, and you were talking about how remarkable it was that we were back as a net exporter. Are we firmly entrenched as a net exporter right now?
Well, we're still on the oil side a slight net importer, but we are exporting an awful lot, and it's continued to grow. And as a growth concept, that really on the natural gas side, we've been a net exporter for some time now. But in terms of oil, our net imports, as of September, they were only 800,000 barrels per day. And compare that back in 2008 with imports of 12 million barrels per day. This is just remarkable. And as of October, our production hit this record of 12.6 million barrels per day by API's estimates. And we see weekly reports now in this month as high as 12.8. So the U.S. Energy Information Administration is saying, you know, for the fourth quarter that we're going to get up to 13 million barrels per day. You've got to add another almost 5 million barrels per day on top of that of natural gas liquids. So the liquids that can be extracted from natural gas production, which is really important in Texas and the Permian Basin. As that happens, we've got this record production that's so strong that it's offsetting. Normally, when we think about strong demand and strong exports, people get worried about prices going up. But the production's been so strong that the prices have actually gone down in the last month or so.
Boone Pickett, just to tell us, you know, how nice it would be not to have to send money to people that would turn around and try to bomb us with it or really hate us. And we're getting there. We're as getting to be self-sufficient. But by the same token, and I know you've lived all over the world, how destabilizing can this be to some of the foreign countries that have made such a good living selling us oil for so long?
It's a great question, because when we look at what low oil prices have done, it's been good for consumers across the world and actually kind of a self-calibrating or supporting effect for consumers across most of the developed or consuming economies. But for the producing nations, if you look at OPEC nations, roughly a half of them are deeply in recession right now. And it's only kind of held it together with ceding market share to the United States, where there's been some agreement between Saudi Arabia and Russia on how to try to balance the market through supply cuts. And basically, they've thrown some of the other members of OPEC under the bus, so to speak. So whether it's letting Iran and Venezuela be subject to heavy sanctions from the United States, Iraq being somewhat destabilized in its ability to continue to grow, Qatar conflicts there between Saudi Arabia and the nation. So the ability to grow natural gas or oil out of the region has been restricted, and that's helped at least have a modicum of stability. Though we'll have to see how far and how long and how that plays out. No one can really predict the price off of it, and that is OPEC's behavior is always the wild card when we try to look at global oil markets.
You know, API is, and I don't mean to be telling you, I'll tell the audience, it's 100 years old. I mean, it's a national trade organization, supports over 10 million jobs, U.S. jobs that are in the oil and gas industry and the related industries. So I know you're in touch with your owners, if you will. How do they feel? Is there enough stability in the pricing of natural gas and oil that the independent guy can go out and, with confidence, you know, start a well, knowing that he'll get his money back when if he hits?
Absolutely. When you look, and there is a range across the United States in different producing areas, but when you look at what's been happening, it has been the independent companies that have continued to be the source of innovation and growth in our industry. And the larger companies have got a piece of the action, and they're growing in this as well. But when we look at the so-called break-even price of what market equivalent price do you need of West Texas Intermediate crude oil or NYMEX Henry Hub natural gas, what market price do you need to break even when drilling a well in different areas that could yield natural gas, oil, or a mix, you know, with natural gas liquids coming out? And we see that the prices have continued to improve in terms of those break-even prices coming down, and they've been generally below market prices as well. So this has been something that's continued to enable growth and production by our industry, and then we look at the productivity trends and see that those have continued to improve. So the U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA, tracks that in the drilling productivity report, and those trends have been really strong.
There had been a sort of a quiet shakeout in the oil and gas industry on the volatility of prices, and also as prices got depressed. Is it stabilized, or are there still some weak players that are out there?
Well, as you said, the prices are going in a range, and companies of different sizes weather that cycle, and there is still a business cycle that goes with it. A lot of people predicted a lot of industry consolidation would occur after oil prices fell from the $100 range in 2014 to, you know, basically cut in half by 2015 or less. And here we are, several years removed, where the prices have remained low. And when we look at futures prices for natural gas or oil all the way out to 2025 and 2030, go out a decade, and you still have basically market expectations for $50 oil and $3 natural gas per million BTU. So that's remarkable, and that says that there's a lot of faith in the ability of this production and the resource base to occur. The industry may evolve. It has to evolve and continue to change with those market conditions, and it probably is, you know, as we've seen, API, as you said, 100 years as a standard-setting organization and increasingly as a trade association representing the widest swath of oil and gas companies across the United States, we see that there was a huge swell in membership over the last decade with the energy revolution, and we'll see what happens over the next decade. But it wouldn't be unusual, as a trend like this matures, to continue to see some maturation of that, perhaps some consolidation occurs as well.
And I guess there are threats out there. I mean, we've got Elon Musk unveiling an electric truck here pretty soon, and sales of electric vehicles and use of solar power and wind power are picking up steam. There are a lot of threats to the industry, aren't there?
Well, threats are opportunities. A lot of our largest companies view themselves as energy companies that are diversified and trying to be part of the solution, if you will, to the energy transition along the way. Electrification is one of the paths that's competing, but it's almost like an infomercial in some ways of, wait, there's more, in the sense that it's not just the cost of generating electricity, it's transmission, it's distribution, it's charging infrastructure, on top of the vehicles and the subsidies and other things that go with that. So the all-in cost, when we start looking at electrification and who's paying for whom, when the average household income of someone who buys an electric vehicle today is sitting in six figures, it's somewhat of a niche, and it tends to be a second vehicle. And if you were in California, or I grew up in Florida, if you're evacuating from a hurricane and you don't have the infrastructure to be able to recharge, or you have a wildfire in California and your power gets shut off, these are issues in terms of reliability. But with liquid fuels, we have a very tried and true infrastructure that's proving.
Yep, it's probably going to be
the economics have remained strong, which has continued.
Exactly. Dr. Dean Foreman is the chief economist for the American Petroleum Institute. We always enjoy reading your comments, and thanks for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks
a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. For more of our conversation with Dr. Foreman, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson. News Radio 1080 KRLD.